The Haines Assembly ponders its priorities in light of dwindling state and federal funding, and scientists are using unusual methods to map Southeast's early inhabitants. It's a KHNS Local News. I'm Margaret Friedenauer. Those stories and more up next. The Skagway Assembly meets Thursday with only one ordinance up for discussion. That has to do with creating a list of established trails in response to recently developed trapping regulations. The Parks and Recreation Committee has been working to identify trails that fall in that category. They came up with three: the Dewey Lakes, Yakutani Point, and AB Mountain Skyline Trails. The Assembly has to approve those designations. The Assembly will also discuss a municipal fuel oil bid award and lobbyist contract renewal. And the Assembly plans an executive session to discuss the draft lease with the Alaska Industrial Development Authority for a post-2023 lease of the ore terminal, and to discuss an amendment to the Gateway Project. The draft lease is already public, and the Gateway Project amendment was discussed in a public meeting recently, but the agenda states the two items could have an adverse effect on city finances and therefore qualifies for executive session. Manager Scott Hahn, in his report, discusses the many projects underway in the city. He notes Skagway is currently moving ahead with construction work on the small boat harbor building and boat launch, and design engineering work for 10 projects, including the public safety building, rec center expansion, and solid waste recycling compost facility. He expresses concern that much of that design work will then lead to a request to construct, and he writes in his report whether the city has the funds and staff to manage this many projects in the next year. A complete agenda and meeting packet is available online at skagway.org. The Skagway Assembly meets at 7 p.m. Thursday in Assembly Chambers. The Haynesboro Assembly on Tuesday voted to allow the Free Ride World Tour to use some areas near Telemark Ridge for a ski event in March. That area is currently not on the commercial ski tour map, but special event organizers can apply to use out-of-bound areas for their event. Free Ride World Tour can use that area for a window of 7 days in March. The Assembly also discussed the borough's list of state and federal legislative priorities. These give state and federal lawmakers an idea of the capital projects most important to the borough, depending on what projects qualify for state and federal funding. On the list of state priorities adopted by the Assembly, upgrades for the wastewater treatment facility is first, followed by the LUTAC dock replacement, road improvements, and the small boat harbor expansion project. The list of projects for federal funds took more discussion. The Haines Small Boat Harbor project is at the top of that list and has been for years. It's already in design and some work has been completed, but some Assembly members suggested moving the LUTAC dock to the top spot with its recent issues. George Campbell put it this way.
Currently, the Haines Boat Harbor, for a few weeks in the summer, is overflowing. The rest of the year, we've got room in it, and it's functioning nicely. Our LUTAC dock facility, if we don't hurry up and construct something soon, we won't have a facility. So having a working facility that we just want to expand as our number one priority does not make sense to me at all when we've got a facility that is collapsing out from under us in a very short time period. So
there was also a discussion of whether the Secure Rural Schools program should be listed in the number two spot. Joanne Waterman said that program is less likely to lose funding since it serves communities across the nation. The borough should prioritize projects specific to our area, she said. The Assembly attempted to jostle the list, but in the end decided to refer it to the Government Affairs and Services Committee to refine. Also, Mayor Hill made Assembly Committee appointments and appointed Diana Lapham deputy mayor. And manager Dave Sosa commented on a few items from his report, including the new 911 system being installed at the police department. The system is still not yet fully functional because it is missing a key piece of equipment and software that wasn't included in the original contract for the work. That addition will cost another $48,000. Sosa writes he is reviewing that proposal and contract with the engineering firm that advised the borough for the project. He also notes that he's working with the facilities and water and sewer departments to draft options for potential rate increases. Sosa also discussed the idea for a survey to gauge community views on some issues and projects. That idea came from a discussion with John Schnabel about the Juneau Access Project. Sosa said a survey could evaluate concerns not just about the road, but about other issues like the LUTAC dock. Results could also help the borough prioritize projects and spending, he says. Assemblymember Ron Jackson said recent community meetings on the Juneau Access Project seemed to provide clear ideas on the majority of the residents' opinions on the project, but Diana Lapham disagreed. She says she thinks meetings often only bring out one element of the community who are most vocal for or against something. Mike Kay said he would support a survey if it was conducted by a professional company or consultant. And Sosa said he is researching what it would take to conduct such a survey and what issues or questions it might include. Finally, there was one item in the manager's report that showed a surprise increase in funding. That is from the raw fish tax collected from fish processors in the borough, primarily the Ocean Beauty plant in Excursion Inlet. The borough estimates what it might receive each year, but underestimated this year by $93,000. The tax that arrives at the borough this year is for fish caught and processed in 2013. That was a record-breaking year for pinks in Southeast. Pink runs are usually large in the odd number years, but 2013 exceeded most predictions. That netted the Haynesboro $438,000, the most of any year since the tax was first collected in 1990. The money goes into the borough's general fund, with a portion of it going to harbor operations. The borough has appropriated about $4,500 of this year's tax revenue to purchase galvanized dumpsters for the harbor. Sosa says while the borough underestimated this year's amount, it's offset by other deficits. For example, the borough expects a decrease in the amount collected from property taxes because of senior exemptions this year. The Earth's crust is more flexible than you think, especially in Southeast Alaska. Growing and shrinking ice fields and glaciers and rising and falling oceans have altered the region's coastline over time. Understanding those changes is helping scientists to learn more about the area's early human habitation. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports from a recent lecture in Juneau.
We've all pretty much grown up with the assumption that the land we live on is where it's been for thousands of years. Sure, we have volcanoes and earthquakes, and if you paid attention in school, plate tectonics, but the big stuff happened millions of years ago, right? Wrong. In this part of the world, drastic changes have happened in the past 5 to 15,000 years. Forest Service geologist Jim Bechtel explains.
The ice came out on the landscape, it pushed down on that land, the sea reinvaded as the ice started to melt, and now that land has risen up. So what it gives us is an idea of the timing of deglaciation.
He knows that because he and others have been mapping shell beds. They've been found from below today's shorelines to hundreds of feet above. Once you figure out where the shore used to be, you can make an educated guess of where early inhabitants lived and what they saw.
If you and I would have been 10,000 years ago on the shoreline and we lived to be 50 years old, sea level would have rose 10.2 feet in our lifetime.
That, by the way, matches some oral history. The information means scientists have found numerous settlements and followed them as they moved up and down rivers and streams as the ocean rose and fell. Scientists have found campsites with tools and other signs of occupation. Bechtel says they include agate and obsidian, which is only found in a few areas.
So these people had been on the landscape long enough to find all those sites and develop trade back and forth from those sites throughout all of Southeast Alaska by 10,500 calendar years ago.
The findings have larger implications for the region's human history. For example, Bechtel says flooding could have made it easier for early inhabitants to travel.
So when people were coming into Southeast Alaska, they might not have been paddling down rivers, they were coming down the fjords.
And once they arrived, travel would have been more on the water than the land.
Admiralty Island was a multitude of islands. If you look at Cleveland Peninsula and stuff, it was a multitude of islands. Same with Gravina Island and Annette Island outside of Ketchikan.
Bechtel and other scientists have continued expanding their discoveries. He says before 2009, only 5 early settlement sites had been located. Since this type of research began, 17 more have been added to the list. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau.
For KHNS News, I'm Margaret Friedenauer. Thanks for joining us this evening. You can listen to and read local news stories on our website at khns.org.